It's the world famous KSL Movie Show on KSL News Radio.
It's a movie show digital extra. That's that special thing we do just for our podcast version and for our listeners, where we have something we want to share with our listeners, but we just don't have time to do it on our two-hour over-the-air show. And this is one of those times, definitely. And that's to sit down with filmmaker T.C. Christensen. T.C., a longtime friend of the movie show. T.C., welcome to the movie show Digital Extra.
I'm a digital extra?
You're a digital extra. You've had extras in your films. Now we're giving some bonus. We call it digital bonus, but on the DVDs, aren't they usually called like extras?
Yeah, that's been my goal in life, to be a digital extra.
Well, the way things are going, at some point you could be a digital extra in your own movies, right?
That is how it's going, yeah. All right. Well, then I can die now.
I've done No. Don't get ahead of yourself here. Well, what we're talking about today is your brand new movie, Escape from Germany, which releases officially. Does it come out on Thursday, or does it actually come out on Friday, the 12th?
You know, they let us do a day early to help with the first weekend, but so it's really Thursday, yeah, that it'll be in theaters.
And now this is the story of the missionaries, LDS missionaries' evacuation from Germany right as World War II began in August of 1939, because it was the first day of the invasion was September 1st.
Right.
But the... Well, no way to say it any different. The miraculous way that the missionaries were able to get out of Germany and not just, oh, well, it's time to leave. Everybody, let's get on the train and leave.
That's what it sounds like. You just say, oh, everybody get out, go. But it wasn't. There were a lot of barriers to it, as you say, and it took some miracles and some ingenuity and stickity-tuity for them to get out.
All right. Everybody ready?
President Wood, are we doing the right thing? Mission presidents don't steal trains.
Well, this one does. All right, let's choo-choo out of here.
Now, we'll go into all of that, but for my first question for you, and just for our listeners' sake, we'll probably talk spoilers in this podcast, so I look at this as the companion to having seen the movie as much as anything else. Like, once you've seen the movie, these will be the things. I saw it yesterday, so I've already seen it, and what we'll talk about is some things. My goal, TC, is you may agree or disagree with my opinion on the movie, but the only thing I don't want to do is spoil things that I want, you know. I mean, there's a reason it's called the theatrical experience.
Yeah,
so, first question I have for you is, what made you want to tell this story right now?
I actually wanted to tell this story a long time ago. The right now kind of got forced on me, mostly because of COVID. You know, I was ready to do it. We had 80% of the cast. We had the locations. Everything was put together to do the film, and then, and I wasn't willing to run out and make a film during COVID, because the risk of cast getting it or crew, and then you have to shut down, and there's expenses with all that. And anyway, so I've waited, but now that we're over all of that, I could get into the locations I wanted. Now I can not worry about people getting sick and shutting us down. So now is the time for that. Now, in broader terms, I first heard of this story probably 13 or 14 years ago. And most of those stories that I like sit and percolate. And this one did for quite a few years. And it took quite a few people calling me or writing me or sending me things and saying, hey, why don't you ever look at this? You should look at that. And when that happens, that's one indicator. I know there's something about this story that people are relating to, and I take a deeper look at it.
So is it something someone shared with you, or is it something you came across on your own?
Well, the first time I heard about it, we had just done 17 Miracles, and I was invited to a Sons of the Utah Pioneers event. And they sat me down next to an older gentleman, and he got talking to me, and he told me I was one of those missionaries that was evacuated from Germany right before World War II. And I'm like, what? I'd never heard of it. He told it as if it was kind of a thing that people knew. I didn't know it. And then after that, years after that, someone sent me a book. Terry Montague, an author from Idaho, has written a book about the event. And then other people started calling, you know, and then pretty soon you start to get serious about it. But here's the thing I got to tell you about all that, Andy, is that this was a bigger deal. I mean, you know, I'm talking financially. I can go get a bunch of hand carts and go out in the woods and make
right.
a film. But this is 1939 Germany, and it's trains and period cars and just a lot bigger stuff that I knew we couldn't film it all here. And I didn't think I could pull it off. I felt like this is too big for the amount of money that I'm able to get and responsibly spend. But I got
responsibly spend being the key word.
It really is. But I got thinking about it, and what if we do this instead of that big thing? I can make it in a smaller thing. I can do it, and eventually got enough ideas that I felt like, yeah, now I think I'm at a point now we can do this.
Well, it's interesting because literally my next question was going to be, how do you shoot a period piece movie on a budget? Because by necessity, almost, it requires a bigger budget than you would if you could just go out and, you know, film in Utah and stuff like that. Because when you're going to shoot period, that could be location or time, you know, that you got to find clothes that are appropriate to the area, or at least as close as you can approximate. You've got to find a background that doesn't, you know, there's been some movies shot in Utah before that were supposed to be other places, and they looked like a Liberty Home or a Ivory Home down in Draper.
Well,
this is supposed to be in an ancient time, and I struggled with that when I was watching it. So how do you do that?
Well, I'm also the screenwriter, and so it starts there where I'm thinking in terms of not just telling the story, but how can we pull this off, and what would be an interesting location but still is doable, where we don't have to have 1,000 extras. Is there a way we can do it with 100 extras? And you're just looking, as I'm scripting it, I'm thinking that through with every scene and trying to make sure that I don't overextend and then get caught in those situations where you're going, this looks rinky-dink.
So does that help then being the writer also? You don't have as the director to say, I want to do this, and then the writer saying, okay, you can at least eliminate that time and wait.
Well, that is, I think that is a bonus. The downside is I'm not very good at any of them.
And so, stop!
And so, well, really, if I was going to, I mean, there were other writers I would hire, there were other directors I would hire, but it's a way that I found that I can make movies, the stories that I want to tell, and still get our investors' money back, and that means I get to do another one.
Okay. So what were some of the, tricks, but what was some of the movie-making magic you used to create 1939 Germany? What were some locations that stood in for 1939 Germany? Was any of it actual Germany?
We didn't want to go to Germany. You actually don't want to go to Germany to do a Nazi film.
Oh, that makes sense.
You can understand.
Don't worry, I'm going to ask you about that too.
Okay, then. So we did a search and decided on Budapest, Hungary.
It was Europe, though.
Yes, and I, at first impression, I thought I'd never been to Hungary, and I thought this might be a little bit more Eastern Europe kind of a feel. It's really have you ever been there?
I have not.
A lovely European city. The Danube goes through it, and the architecture, and it was really a good choice.
It's really kind of where East and West, we're talking Europe to Asia, that's where they meet, right? It's kind of the cultural center for the two.
And guess what else they have? Old trains and old big European train stations. And they have two of them right there in Budapest. So that was a big draw for us to go there. And it worked out terrifically.
Well, yeah, no. And then I thought the other one is shoot a lot of tight shots.
Yeah.
Where you can kind of, thankfully, this is a story that deals with a lot of human emotion.
Personal, yeah.
And on a personal level, spiritual. Anybody who's been a missionary can empathize with Elder Siebold's feelings at different times. And it's actually funny. Most missionaries, when they're missionaries, think more like Elder, is it Anderson, the younger one that shows up?
Yes.
And most people, when they get older, think like Elder Siebold.
Good.
And it's a great balance to have the two together. I remember when I trained a missionary and I had, you know, you go through enough experiences that you kind of get trained. And so since we're talking about stories with faith, sometimes your faith wanes because of the experiences that you've had. And it takes the person that comes in with the fresh eyes to be like, wait, why do you have no faith? And you're like, oh my goodness, I maybe have not showed the same faith I did a few months ago. Maybe I can, and it's nice to have that other person to kind of help lift you back up. At least that was my experience. That's not a question. That was more of a statement.
But it was good stuff.
But as I watched those things, I liked seeing how that played out. I could actually relate to both sides of their experience, you know, brand new. What is a missionary who's brand new? Why did I get called to here when I was going to get evacuated before I even make it to my first area? Those are all questions that one might ask, and this is what they faced. And the best stories to me are the ones that tell a narrative, but then your mind like fills in all these other things on your own. And I'll admit I had to hit rewind a couple of times. Thankfully, I had a screen where I could do that, because I got off on like a thought tangent from the movie and was like, oh, I need to, what did they just say? And I had to jump back. But I like movies that do that to me, especially when I can rewind them.
You know, I'll tell you a goal of mine, and I'm not smart enough that I made this up, but very often I think some of the best films are films that the masses, when they watch it, at some point, even if it's subconsciously, they look at the story and the protagonist and they say, this is about me. I go through this. This is my story. And that creates this bond and interest. Anyway, that's something I consciously think about as I'm writing and producing a film, is to try to make it broad enough that people will want to know what happens, because that might give an indication what happens to them if they continue faithful.
I remember talking with you, I think it was about this movie, last summer when you came on the movie show.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned you were working on a movie where you wanted to shoot, where part of the story took place at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Was that this movie then, I would assume? Seems like the right time period. But and because I said, I'm interested to see how you're going to complete that. And you were like, yeah, I'm interested to figure it out too. So I'm guessing that was something that, if it was a thought, it had to just be jettisoned.
No.
Or is that something else?
Actually, we've got two other films going too. And the other, it does deal with the Olympics, but it's the 1912 Stockholm Olympics. And that has been
That's really what it was. You're right. That's the one.
That's been
with Jim Thorpe, right?
Yes, Jim Thorpe's part of it.
Okay. So then, going back to something you said, you don't want to shoot a movie in Germany using about the Nazis, and that makes perfect sense, by the way. But how difficult is it to even find Nazi symbols, and does it feel weird to prep the set for a day of shooting like that?
Well, to me, it's all movie dressing. It's just like you look at pictures from that period. And, you know, that Nazi regime, the Third Reich, that was probably the greatest advertising campaign that's ever been done in the history of the world. I mean, just objectively, to look at what they did. That swastika was everywhere, and they influenced the minds of the people through their marketing. And so we had to have
propaganda, I believe, the term.
Right, there you go. Yeah. We had to, of course, have quite a few swastikas hanging up. We were sensitive to that. We filmed in some public places here, and at times we would have it on a building and leave it rolled up until we're ready to shoot, and then get the scene or the shot, and then roll it back up. Because people just driving down the street, they want to see that. We were filming in one location, and a lady kind of stormed onto the set, and you could see she's mad, and she's ready to tell us what's up and what's down. And then she sees the camera and the dolly and the lights, and, oh, is this a movie? Yeah, it's a movie. Oh, okay. She was fine and left. But we try to be sensitive to that. So we did find some great locations. One of them is the Masonic Temple on South Temple. That's a wonderful building. If you ever get a chance to go in that, it was built in the 20s. Oh. And they've never really refurbished it. It just kind of is what it is. And, man, we went in there and just, you can, oh, that's great. That's great. Shoot that. And Hart didn't have to do a lot of set dressing.
I remember the apartment that the missionary couple lived in. I remember thinking, ooh, where was that? Because that's got to be another tough thing, is to find interior period accurate stuff, because you can find houses that were built in the 1900s, but they've usually been renovated on the inside. So to find a set inside that, or was that actually on a movie set that you shot?
No, that wasn't. It's an advantage of, you know, having been in the film industry here for 100 years or however old I am. I know a lot of places and have experiences with, and I'm a big file maker. I write things down. And when I see something that I think is pretty cool, I put it into a file and remember it. And that particular thing that you're talking about, that apartment, that's a find. I mean, we went in and hardly had to do any set dressing. We have a 1939 German apartment.
Wow. Well, how fortunate.
That's one of the purposes of the film commission we have, which supports us and does a great job. And they, I can ask them, do you have anything like this? And they have files, and they'll help me. It's all a good community.
Okay. Well, let's take a break really quick, and then when we get back, I want to talk about some of the actual story points from the film and some of the really things that I found to be really cool about Escape from Germany, the new film from T.C. Christensen.
The Movie Show.
Spock, you haven't changed a bit. You're just as warm and sociable as ever.
No, have you, Doctor? As your continued predilection for irrelevancy demonstrates.
On KSL News Radio.
It's a movie show digital extra. Andy Farnsworth and T.C. Christensen, the maker of Escape from Germany, the latest in a great line of, I think, successful movies from T.C. I haven't watched one yet that I don't enjoy. In fact, I wanted to make sure I told you about this because my 10-year-old son, every time he sees The Pump on our home media server, Dad, let's watch The Pump again. Do you remember that one?
Jeez, yeah, it's a classic story. It's poor production and poorly directed and everything
Stop.
Else. But it's a good story, and that's what your son's relating to.
And a period piece.
Yeah, I do like period pieces.
That one's a pump, for people who don't know what it is. A guy gets stuck in the desert. He takes an off-road trail, even though the map says this is not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Does it anyway. Finds himself in the desert, finds a ghost town, and he finds a pump. He's now out of water, and there's a bottle of water and a pump. And there's an instruction that says, "Tain't never failed yet."
Oh, you can do the voice.
I've seen it a few times. You got to pour the water in the bottle into the pump to prime it, and it'll always give water. That's what the note says. And now the person is faced with the choice. Do I believe it, or drink the water in the bottle? And I'll let you watch the movie to see what the guy decides. But, yeah.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You can tell a good story in as little as 5 to 10 minutes. How long was it?
9 minutes.
9 minutes, yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about Escape from Germany. It opened, for those of you who are listening to this after April 12th, it opened on April 12th. And what's the distribution set look like? I know it's opening here in Utah, but what are there plans for other markets?
Yeah, we're in probably 80% of the theaters in Utah this opening weekend. And then 2 weeks later, we go to Arizona and Idaho, I believe Las Vegas. And then we also have some outliers, you know, some Wyoming and Washington State and California. But it's...
And hopefully Dallas for my cousin's sake.
Oh, I hope Dallas for cousin and Hawaii. But You know, it's contingent on how it does. That's how it works. If nobody supports it and they don't really go to it very well, then the other theaters just kind of drop off and you're on to streaming.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the things in the movie. And in it, Elder Siebold is given the assignment to evacuate, was it 20 or 30 missionaries that they, in the era before cell phones and email and the ability to instantly contact people. And I was a missionary in the 90s, and it wasn't easy to contact people, let alone going back to 1939. They get the order to evacuate all the missionaries because war is imminent, and Elder Siebold is given the assignment by himself, no less, to go and find, was it 30? Am I getting that right? Or I know, was it 20?
No, the mission president tells him it's somewhere around 30.
Oh, okay.
But even that, see, they don't know. Like you said, it's a crapshoot. There's no communication.
And we think they're somewhere in these cities here.
Yeah, and they're all just trying to get on trains, and they know they don't have enough money, to do what they, mission.
Yeah, there wasn't the travel department at the church headquarters that would purchase the tickets for everybody.
So it's just a big pig mess, and he's got to go out and try to figure it out and get. And you know, a thing if you caught, I love about that whole situation, and it was really one of the quantifiers for me to want to make the film. This mission president sends one guy. That's not how we do missionaries.
Nope.
Missionaries are always two. There's two. One
even
guy.
Elder Siebold wasn't too sure about it at first either.
No, he said, "What do you want me to do?" Well, you go and find him. One guy. Well, see, that's way better for a story for me. That's my own view of it, because now it's one guy against Nazis and everything that's against him and German shepherds and all these things that come up against him.
I loved how you had the German shepherd that was also doing the goose step with the soldier next to it.
He doesn't do the goose step.
It looks like it.
But he kind of does.
They're marching in a very similar cadence. Yes. I actually chuckled when I saw that because it's that really close-up shot of the legs and the boot. As he decides to go out, he's like, how do I do this, President? He's like, be led by the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, and it took me till the end of the movie to realize this, and you did add a thing in the closing credits, but I am proud to say that I figured this out before you told me in the closing credits. He couldn't whistle, and then he could whistle, and then he couldn't whistle again. And I thought, oh my goodness, that whistling is kind of like his spiritual radar. Because in the places where there weren't missionaries, he couldn't whistle. And when there was, he could. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize till he couldn't do it again that there was a bookend to that.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's a true thing. He would whistle a hymn, and it's a hymn that you'd only recognize if you were a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be instantly recognizable.
Well, that's what he did, and as I've thought about that situation, I think it's just a great metaphor, because here he is, he's a shepherd sent out to find his flock, and he finds this way that through all the chaos of trains and stations and noise, a whistle cuts through, and you hear it, and those people, those missionaries that needed to hear it, were in tune, and they heard it, and they came to him, and he takes his flock and takes them home. That I really love that whole aspect of the story in the film.
For me, when I watch this with the family, that's what I'm pointing out to the kids also, is if those other missionaries don't know those hymns, then that's just whistling, just like any other random tune. But because it was one that they knew and were familiar with, and they would realize it's out of this context. I just thought it was great. I thought that was really neat.
Well, they know to go, because who's going to be whistling that song? It's got to be somebody for looking for us, and it worked.
When you were telling the story, did you have to try to decide how much to focus on the German saints that were left behind versus the missionaries that they were trying to get out? Because I thought there could have been some great, you know, if this was the 4-hour director's cut, you could have spent some more time with some of the German saints that the missionaries had to leave behind.
The main thing I decided early on in that regards was that I could tell from my research, and I suspected this before anyway, that there were a lot of good people in Germany. We vilify the entire country when in reality there were a lot of good people, and I think especially church members that were caught up in it, and they just, you know, you can't resist.
Well, the branch president died in combat, which meant he was shooting at the Allies as he was had to. I actually thought that was, in a day where there's so much division worldwide, not just in America, but worldwide, that there are some things that are unifying across political boundaries, and there are some things that are bigger, and that if you can, you know, if you have that thing in common, I hope you can see past the things that you don't have in common to the more important things that you do have in common.
Well, so I wanted to make sure I make that point, that anybody that watches the film goes, I feel sorry for those people too. Even they were Germans, they were part of the war that we were against, but they were some good people there. And I didn't feel like I could dwell too long on it, because another thing that I do with, it's a way that we can make films for less money, is I make shorter films.
Okay.
You know, you don't make more money if it's a 3-hour film, you know, per minute,
right,
than you do if it's a 90-minute film. You still pay the same money at the box office and so forth. So I like shorter films. I think so many films I go to now, if I come out of it going, if they'd have cut 10 minutes out of that, that would have been way better. So really try to be tight and keep the story tight. But you are observant that that is an area I really could have explored more.
I will say, too, you know, I was talking with you before we started, like, you always seem to get me. You always, I think, no, I've made it through this without having a tearful emotional reaction to something. And one of the ones that got me was in the closing credits with the elder who said he signed up for the Air Force, but he did not feel like he could bomb the people he preached the gospel to. And that really just got me almost out of nowhere. And then, you know, I'll let you watch the movie to hear about how that was resolved. But just, it wasn't even the final resolution that got me. It was reading that part, because I could totally understand exactly what that same feeling is it's a reminder that of what a waste war is, what a tragedy war is, that, you know, this branch president gets called up because the leaders have decided this needs to happen. We need the people. This is what you got to do. Whether they personally would do it or want to do it or not, they had to do it. They did their duty, and just, if it wasn't for this, it would be completely different. And it just points out how utterly pointless, when it's all said and done, war is. So it, I don't know. Like I said, I had a lot of thoughts and feelings while I was watching the movie. For me, the scene where the elder prays at the train station, and it shows the different German people that you've met along the way, that was the first time that it really, really got me. And that's kind of what prompted this thought process was, you know, it just flashes back to the family that says goodbye to the mission president at the train station, which, by the way, the mom in that family is my neighbor.
Oh, is that?
I was like, wait a second. Is that? And of course, she's German, so I knew it had to be her. And that was really cool. I immediately texted my son on his mission, who's friends with her son.
And,
but just meeting all the different ones, and I don't know. It was really touching. That's what I think you do best is, at least how you connect with me the most, is the human side of how in a 90-minute film, you don't need 3 hours to do this, but you're doing it in a much shorter time, that it just connects with me and makes me feel a connection and an empathy with them.
I think one reason that scene you mentioned maybe kind of touched you is because here's this young missionary who's been kind of a dingle dork the whole time.
Full of facts that nobody really wants to hear.
He's just kind of a nerd, you know, hanging around. And then he's asked to say the prayer, and he's nervous about himself. He expresses, hey, this is kind of scary. But he flips it, and instead of praying for himself, he prays for others, which is really what we all should do, you know, caring about others. And when he does that and starts giving us insights into all the other people, not just them that are having struggles, this band of missionaries, it brings in just a much more Christ-like attitude to the group. The whole group feels it.
I know I have a question about that scene as well, because this is one that I wasn't sure of even after I watched it, where he's praying. Does Elder Seibel have a vision of those elders that are at their different locations that he still hasn't found yet? Did I get that right?
Well,
because I saw those spots and I was like, I didn't remember seeing like that scene of the two on the bench at the train station. But then when he finds them later, that's that exact same shot. And then I thought, as you were showing the people that the elder was praying for, and then you showed those other things, I wondered, because then Elder Seibel went and found them, if during that prayer he got impressions as to where he ought to go next. I don't know if that was intentional, if that's just how I interpreted it.
Well, I'm thrilled with that interpretation, and I accept that interpretation. It's good. But like a lot of things, it can be interpreted different ways, and we're very familiar in film with flashbacks, but that is a flash forward. You're seeing something that you haven't been introduced to yet, and later in the film you're going to see it. That was
okay, so Elder Seibel didn't necessarily see that, but it was intentional for us to see it.
Yeah, but I like your way of looking at it, too. I'd take both of those. That was part of inspiration. Yeah.
Okay. It was good to see Barta Heiner again. I really loved her in Once I Was a Beehive, and I saw she was in it, and then I kept looking for her, and then we finally meet her. She was on the train, I want to say?
Just one short scene where she gives us the feeling of what it's like to be an older person in Germany, and they've already gone through a war, and now they're staring another one in the face, and how awful that was for them.
Was that something that you added as you were writing it, or was that something in the original book?
It happened. That happened.
Oh, that actually happened. Okay.
Now,
because sometimes I assume that there's some narrative, like we want to get this point across, but we just need to have, for example, some of the thoughts of the elder, you can't read their thoughts, so there has to be dialogue exchanges between them and somebody else, dialogue that maybe didn't take place.
True.
I was wondering about Elder Seibold's attitude at the beginning, if that was more of a dramatic, because I was thinking, if I'm Elder Seibold and I'm watching this movie, am I looking at myself like, I wasn't like that? But then I thought, well, now if you got to tell a story in a condensed time period, you have to get a lot of thoughts and different things out that, you know, maybe he wasn't like that outwardly, but as he wrote in his journal, I was really frustrated and I didn't know what to do. You've got to demonstrate that somehow beyond just a furrowed brow or like pursed lips on the part of the actor.
There is a little bit of additives, the TC additives, you know, that I do. But I'll tell you, I made a list. I got to back up one more. When I go out and speak and talk to groups about not just this film, any film, one of the first things in a question answer is they want to know, is this true? That's our culture. We want to know, did you just make up this whole thing or is it true? And I try to be really very true to being true. But there are a few things that have to be, just like you were saying, to fill in some blanks and make it work as a story a little better. So I sat down at one point with this film, and I wrote down the things that I took a little liberty on that I couldn't really say, yes, that's true or happened or whatever. And it's a list of about three or four things.
Wow.
Then my list of things that actually happened is a page and a half, 2 pages. Well, it's the whole script. Because really, 95% of what you see in this story really happened. Now, I have to qualify that in one other way, too. Sometimes it didn't happen to Norm Seibold. like, you know, there's an incident that happens right when the film opens with a Gestapo guy.
You will come with me now.
I am an American citizen. I demand to speak with the military police.
Don't you touch me! If you touch me, there's going to be a fight.
Well, that didn't happen to Elder Siebold?
That did not happen to him. It happened to another elder.
Okay.
And so that's in the spirit of the times and what's going on in Germany and so forth. So I feel totally justified in taking that happened to another elder and giving it to Norm Siebold.
Yeah, I think that narratively worked. And that's, again, you're not making a documentary, because you could make a documentary if you wanted to. But there's a, you know, dramatic license for a dramatic movie. But to me, these, I personally believe that faith-based films work best when they're based on true stories. Only because when it really happened, then you as the viewer have to decide whether you believe it or not. When it's scripted, it can still be powerful, and don't get me wrong, but when it's scripted, you know that whoever wrote the story decided all the factors that went in, however bad the bad guys were, or however, you know, why the timing of the miracle and all those things. And, you know, we talk about, well, how much of that is true? Because we want to know if this is really true. Can I really feel like I can emotionally connect his, or am I just being played by a talented filmmaker? And so that's why I love the faith-based stories that are based on things that happen to actual people. Those are the ones that connect with me. And I personally always feel just a little more skeptical for the, even ones that I happen to agree with, you know, theologically or whatever. I always feel better about the ones, and from any faith tradition, when this really happened to somebody. I saw one a year or so ago about these sisters from Ireland that took a trip to the cathedral in France, where the Lourdes chapel in France. I don't necessarily have the same theological beliefs as them, but it was a really touching movie about people and faith and coming together and you know, what it means to you on a personal level, regardless of what it means to anybody else. I love those kinds of stories, and that's why I appreciate that you tell these true stories and just tell them in a way that connects with me.
That's the goal. Yeah, that I'm the same. I kind of feel myself like I'm an everyman, and I'm one of the gauges that I use, whether would I want to see this? Would this scene touch me? And I think usually if it does, because I'm kind of a crybaby, I'm really easily provoked into crying at a touching scene.
I'm getting more like that as I get older, I've noticed.
Yeah. So if I pass the test with that, then that's one thing that makes me decide to, this is a film worth doing. And a lot of that is based on, is this true?
Okay. Well, let's take one final break here on this Movie Show Digital Extra. And when we get back, I want to ask you about what's still in the pipeline. What stories do you still want to tell? So we'll do that when we come back on the Movie Show Digital Extra.
The Movie Show.
Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor?
On KSL News Radio.
Final segment of the Movie Show Digital Extra. Andy Farnsworth and filmmaker T.C. Christensen. We've been talking about Escape from Germany, this great story about the miracles involved of the evacuation of missionaries from Germany at the start of World War II in 1939. T.C., one thing about the movie, because I think Paul Wuthrich, who plays Elder Siebold, looks a lot like James Marsden. Am I wrong?
Whoever he looks like, he's very handsome. He's very good. Ladies really enjoy him as a leading man, and so do I.
He played Joseph Smith in Witnesses.
Yes.
Was that one of yours?
No, but this is his fifth film I've done with him. This is the first leading role, but I picked up with Paul, probably 8 or 10 years ago.
So, T.C., I'd like to know, your films are like your kids, right? You love each one of them. They each have a different experience with you. If I said, what's your favorite one, what's the one that jumps to mind right now?
I think I have to say this last one. This was really wonderful to be involved with, and I'm saying Escape from Germany. Let me tell you one reason why. All of the extras that you see in the film, so that's the people sitting on benches and walking down the aisles and so forth, 85% of them are descendants of these actual
I wondered if there was any connection.
Of the evacuated missionaries. We put on a big search and found them, and they came. Every day we had extras, and they would show up, and every day I would introduce them to the crew and the cast, and they look, these are the children of the Earl family or the Baker family that was this missionary and so forth. And every day it would make me cry because I look at those, and they're just so happy to be there honoring their ancestor. And so that was really just a terrific thing to have with this film that we haven't always had.
I just saw a movie with Anthony Hopkins a couple of weeks ago that tells a story right at this exact same time frame where the English guy was able to get children out of Czechoslovakia right before the German invasion.
One Life.
One Life, yes, that's right. Thank you. I just felt a similar vibe from both, giving kind of a richer tapestry of the time period. All right, so what are some future TC products? What's going on upstairs?
We've got two films going right now.
Okay.
We're backlogged with COVID and now trying to get some more going. We are going to be releasing probably next year a film, a true story.
Excellent. I like this.
Period. And here's my little short synopsis of the film. It's 1910, Parowan, Utah. There's a kid goes to high school. There's a new sport called track. Never heard of it. There's a new coach coaching track. The coach says, hey, you're big. Why don't you come out for track? The kid comes out for track, and within 2 years, he's at the Stockholm Olympics and wins the gold medal in the high jump. It's a sports story. It's really
I love that.
A little different, you know, for me, because it has a spiritual aspect, but it's much more a sports film.
Does it have a title?
Well,
or is it just a working title?
The working title is Alma Richards. Alma Richards Raising the Bar. It's a story that's a bit known. It was in Saints 3 that they have a little one-page story on Alma Richards.
Okay.
And then my son Tanner, who's always been my editor and does a lot of the visual effects and is my next-door neighbor, he has decided he loves feature documentaries. He's worked on Netflix series, and he loves that. And it's time for him to take a stab at it. So he's directing. I'm shooting and producing a feature documentary on the life of Ben Kerr. True story, local boy, born with all kinds of problems, and he is made fun of and teased, but his mom kicks him out the door and says, you go make friends with people, and don't you hide in your room. That kind of a parent, amazing to me. And he finds his life through wrestling and becomes an All-American wrestler, and it's
wow.
One of those, you know, you can do it kind of stories.
Just someday I'd like it if they only made all-region wrestler.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
Boy.
That's not a story worth telling. What if you had an unlimited budget and they said, TC, you've earned this through all your good work. Name your budget. Name your project. You don't have to tell us the budget, but if you had an unlimited budget, what's the project? What's the story you've always wanted to tell or that you could only tell if you had no constraints?
Oh, there's a few of them that I have wanted to do and unable to do for budget. I don't know that I want to tell you because
okay. It's
kind of a, I don't know, I hate to throw things out there and then I can't
Fair
finish
enough.
Them off. Even though I don't have very much money to make movies, one of the things I always tell in our pre-production meetings that I believe is to make a really good movie, you need not quite enough money and not quite enough time. Filmmakers, there have been several that have been unlimited. They can do whatever they want, and they typically make flops. That's happened quite a few times. And to have the pressure that I do with the money in ways, it's just like in life, it can be a blessing.
That's a great point. I can think of a lot of examples now that you say that where without the it helps to have opposition in all things. Hmm? Opposition, you don't have enough money, you don't have enough time, you've got somebody interfering, you have to make it the best possible. Isn't there a story about a butterfly? If you clip it, the cocoon open, it doesn't have the wing strength to fly, and it actually builds the wing strength by breaking out of the cocoon. Mm. Have you heard that?
No, but that's apropos, yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I could make my own film about
okay.
that. Although I heard that from somebody else. Well, TC, thank you so much for joining me on this Movie Show Digital Extra. I love the fact that we had enough time to really explore a lot of different things, and I'm looking forward to other people's reactions to Escape from Germany. I had a positive emotional one. I appreciate the effort, especially knowing that you have budget constraints. And I think, you know, this is getting a little personal here. When I watch films that are faith-based on my faith tradition, sometimes I almost feel more critical of them because I want them to be, you know, something that what I want is I want someone who isn't of my faith to watch it and get the same feelings that I have having it and watching it. And I think that's one of the things that you do really well is make it something that the universality of the story you can connect to, even if, you know, even if it's not your specific belief set. And to me, I think if somebody who's not, you know, not a member of the LDS church, if they just watch this as a story of just put yourself in their mm-hmm. position, how would you feel? Mm-hmm. Think about your 21, 22 years old on your own in 1939 pre-war Europe, and you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if there's going to be war tomorrow. I mean, we have the benefit of hindsight of knowing that, okay, for the next 6 years, there's going to be a war and Germany's going to be decimated. So we have all that dread built into us as we watch the beginning of this, which I think helps make the story more dramatic. But if you just imagine, what would you do if you were that guy? How would you go about it? And then what would you think as these things keep happening? What would you think if suddenly you knew how to whistle? What would you think if suddenly you keep, despite the number of people in a town, that you keep running into the people that you're looking for? How would you interpret all of that data? Because this is a true story, you can ask yourself those questions and you can connect to it as you watch it. And to me, that's how I hope. First of all, I hope other people will go see it. And I hope that as they watch it, they can see it from that perspective. And I think they'll find a movie that they can really connect to, and it'll be uplifting. I love uplifting. I got grief from somebody that I'm not into horror and that I shouldn't review horror movies because and they're right. But these are ones that I am into, and so I hope people can watch it and get that feeling as they watch Escape from Germany.
I do too. Well put. That's a great way to say it, Andy.
Well, thank you for being here. We look forward to talking with you on the Alma Richards story and our untitled Ben Kerr story. Don't forget to go see Escape from Germany from T.C. Christensen, opening in theaters on April 11th in Utah with a wider distribution to come regionally and hopefully just to keep going from there, because it's a story worth hearing from who I personally think is a master storyteller. And so, T.C., thank you for being with me today.
Thank you. Fun, Andy.
And thank you for listening to the Movie Show Digital Extra. We hope you'll join us for the regular movie show Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 a.m. in Salt Lake City. And, of course, here on KSLpodcasts.com.